And all of a sudden, that's where we can start spiraling down when, wow, when is the last time I took time to go meet a friend or have an hour to myself outside?
Hi, friend. Welcome to Gather and Growth, a show created for passionate, growth-focused rural women like you. From mindset work and building strong habits to exploring the unique joys and challenges of living rural, this is a show to leave you feeling joyful, inspired, and a little less alone. Together, we're on a journey of reaching for the most confident, healthy, and authentic version of ourselves, and I'm forever grateful to have you by my side. Whether you're currently running on a back road, shuffling kids to town, hopping along for a tractor ride, or three loads deep into folding laundry, grab yourself a nice coffee and let's dive in. Hello, friends. Welcome back to Gather and Grow. Today, I am joined by a friend that I feel like, I don't know how we didn't have this conversation sooner. Actually, Jill and I were talking about, you know, people we'd like to bring on the show, and we were mentioning your name. I'm like, oh no, we already talked to her. And then I'm like, no, wait, we actually did. Like, what? So you and I share so many similar passions and philosophies when it comes to the rural space and what personal and professional growth looks like in agriculture and beyond. So I am very excited for this conversation.
I'm so excited to be here, Emily. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. And for someone just getting to know you for the very first time, Callie, would you give us a little context of who you are, where you are, and what brought you to today?
I think whenever people say that, I try really hard to speak clearly. So hopefully I'm doing that because I always hear, wait, where's that accent from? So I am from North Dakota, and people always confuse it. They're like, oh, that's that state that has those faces and the rocks, right? I'm like, no, that's South Dakota. We are even further north. So I'm up in the northwest corner, actually. We're probably an hour from Montana and 2 hours from Canada, which is, I feel like, where I get a little bit of that heavy accent that people always like to comment on. But we farm and ranch up here. I've got three kiddos. They are 12, 10, and 6. I'm married to my husband, CJ, and our kids are actually the fifth generation on our operation. So we have historically been a cow-calf place, but we also do some backgrounding now. We have a backgrounding feedlot, and then we run some yearlings. We've sold beef for the last few years, and that's ramping up in some different and unique ways right now, but always a lot going on, kind of that side of things, which I help out with a ton. But then I also run a leadership business where I do a lot of speaking, training, coaching, and I'm a mental health first aid facilitator, and just wear a lot of different hats, like I think a lot of different people do in this world.
Mm-hmm. So what brought you to this work in the first place? I don't know that I know your backstory. I imagine you didn't, you know, wake up fresh out of high school and be like, I'm going to be doing leadership coaching for people in agriculture. So What did that journey look like?
It was probably one of those typicals, like, I'm going to be a nurse. And then it's like, well, that's just because I like a clipboard and I like to check things off. So don't care for needles. That wouldn't work. But I went to school and I have a degree in animal science. Mm. And I was kind of like, what do we do with this? Maybe I'll wind up back home someday. To be honest, I always wanted to work for like Cattlemen's Association or something. I love speaking. I love this industry and I've always been tied to it. But ironically, I ended up coming home right away after I graduated from college because CJ was my fiance at that time, and he's from South Dakota, and he saw the oil boom. Our world has changed up here. When I grew up here in Watford City, my town was about 1,500 people. Mm-hmm. So that's what I grew up in, did 4-H, FFA, all of those things. But when I left to college, this crazy oil boom hit, and our town is now about 10,000 people. So it changed overnight. I mean, we have stoplights now, which we didn't have back in the day. We've got a couple fast food restaurants. And so there was a lot of opportunity here, which I think is why I came back, wasn't sure exactly what I wanted to do. I worked for Extension, which I'm sure a lot of your listeners have heard of, you know, 4-H, community engagement. I was the agricultural extension agent. And so I got to do that for a few years. And the thing that really took me on the entrepreneurial path, I think, was, and there was probably a handful of people that don't know this nowadays, but I did Mary Kay. I was pretty high up in Mary Kay, actually. I had earned the free cars, the diamond rings, all those fun things. But I always...
Was it pink? Did you get a pink card?
No, I think a lot of people don't know. Fun fact, they have multiple levels. And so I, at one point, I don't remember the cars I had. I had a Traverse, which was really nice, actually, when I had three kids, too. But I always reference back, like, the part that I loved about Mary Kay and being in a business like that was obviously being an entrepreneur. I know that's not for everybody, but man, I thoroughly love it. Love the challenge and everything that goes with it. But it was the speaking, it was the training, it was the coaching my team and leading other women and making a difference in their life that I loved so much. And so, long story short, I just kind of was feeling this back and forth feeling of what am I supposed to be doing? Where am I supposed to be? And scrolling Facebook one night, and you know those sponsored ads that pop up? Mm-hmm. How creepy they are. But the ironic thing is, I had not even been Googling John Maxwell. And all of a sudden, this sponsored ad came up and it said, become a speaker, trainer, coach with the John Maxwell team. And I was like, what? He has a team? So of course, I clicked the link, filled the info out, and forgot about it. Well, then I got a phone call. And long story short, I've really done a lot with their group, their curriculum and trainings and leadership stuff the past almost 4 years, probably, which is kind of what I've been doing as of lately with my career.
No, I totally relate with that. Like when I left teaching for the YMCA, it was, again, a totally random ad online. Isn't, man, that targeted marketing. Same thing.
Exactly.
Didn't hear anything, didn't ever think that there was anything else. Like, it's just so amazing how, and I think there's something to be said for this, like opportunities present themselves when you're ready, even when you don't know that you are.
Exactly. And
could have seen that 2 months prior or 2 months later, and it may not have even grabbed your attention, but for whatever reason, like there was something about that that was like, huh, maybe that's for me.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's the big thing. My husband and I talk about that a lot and what's worked so well for us in our businesses or here on the operation and what we have going on is like, what makes people successful, a huge piece of it is like they're looking for it. Like instead of, I think that a lot of people see risks and they see what's hard, like, ooh, but Mary Kay's good. And I told people that. I'm like, I have a big team right now. Like things are great. And yet I thought, like, what's next though? Like there's still something out there. And so I'm always looking for the opportunities. Some see it as a risk. I see opportunities out there. And if you don't see it that way, you're never going to take what those chances are, I guess. And you won't see them. You won't see those doors that are open to you.
I think this is such a good segue to something that always makes me think of you, which is that topic of mindset. And two people could see the same opportunity or same post or whatever and look at it two different ways. So how does a person go about changing their mindset? And in this case, it's, you know, risk versus opportunity. But I think this translates to so many different things.
Yeah, I always tell people it's a practice. It takes time to be able to switch your mindset or even to see a different perspective. I think that's where a lot of my coaching comes in, where I work with clients or groups. Even I do a lot of group coaching as well. And the big part is, number one, people have to be willing, right? Because they'll always come and be like, oh, my brother, or oh, my mom and dad, or my boss, or whatever. And it's like, okay, but we can't change people. And I will always say that to them. Like, you can't always change people to be or do or work or act like you think they should. And so how am I going to choose to show up? And a big part of it is that different perspective. It's like a paradigm shift in their minds that, okay, this maybe isn't the circumstance or the situation that I want to be in, but am I in a place where I am willing and able to make the change that I want to see? I mean, that's when somebody's really, they're coachable. Like they're wanting to show up and do that work because they want things a little bit different in their life.
So what does that work look like? Someone has that realization of like, okay, I'm primed, I'm ready. I want to change my reality, whatever that looks like, whether it's health or finances or career or relationships or parenting. Like what are some of those steps that people can take home with them from this conversation to begin shifting their mindset from where they are to where they want to be?
Yeah. I always have people do what we call a brain dump. So in other words, they're listing all these thoughts out that they're having and stuff. And one of the things I work with my clients on, I have this coaching model where we work through it together. And it's just profound. It's crazy for people to recognize because we so often blame it on the circumstance, right? Mm-hmm. Well, my boss did this, or things showed up this way, or the weather is this, and I can't control these things. And so what am I going to do? How can I show up a little bit differently? So I have them do this brain dump where they list everything out that they're being challenged by. Typically, it's not good things, but they're listing it out. And then we recognize, okay, if we can't change the circumstance, how can we change the thought that we're having? And so looking at all the thoughts that people have written down, we're really thinking about, okay, is this helping me? Like, do I feel good when I have this thought? How is it serving me? What are the feelings that are coming up? What am I actually doing or not doing? And what kind of result is it actually producing? A good example that I can give kind of when it comes to thoughts, I often think of this one. For example, was it 3 years ago now? I can't keep track of time. We had one of the worst droughts on record up in my home county. And so what do most people think, right? Woe to me. This is awful. This is going to end us. We're going to have to sell the cattle, all these things, right? A lot of times it's negative energy, negative thoughts that we're having. But if you choose to look at it a different way, things might end up a little bit differently. And so, like I talked about earlier, this whole opportunity versus risk, it's like, if you just sit back and pause sometimes, though, I think in every situation, if you want to, you can find the good. You can find an answer. I always say things are figure outable. I mean, I don't even know if that's a word.
It is. Marie Forleo's. Yeah. Have you read Marie Forleo's Everything is Figure Outable?
No. Nope.
Oh, you got to read that book.
See, I should have wrote the book probably. No.
2.0.
But that is what I think. And when you think differently, you get different results in life. Like your business is different, your relationships, your finances, simply because you think differently. So CJ and I did. It's like, okay, this is a circumstance, right? It's a fact. It is the worst drought on record that we are having. We ranch. This is our business. And so now I have a choice in my thoughts. No matter what your circumstances, you get a choice in how you think about things. And that's not to say, like I said, I do the mental health trainings. That doesn't mean you can't be sad, you can't be struggling, things can't feel hard. But then you have to recognize, okay, but is this helping me run a business or make sound decisions? So long story short, we ended up having one of the best years we've ever had. When everybody else was still sitting back thinking, this is going to break us. We're going to lose the family operation. Because when you think differently, you have different actions, right? Maybe I'm seeking out the extension service. Maybe I'm partnering with my neighbors to think, hey, what are you guys doing? Can we combine? Can we work together to try and think of something that's going to work best for all of us? I mean, it's just, you come up with solutions when you think more positively and that you think there are opportunities. So that's just one example of anybody can come up with their own examples too. It's like, yeah, maybe I didn't approach that situation the best and maybe things could have been different had I showed up a little bit differently to it.
Absolutely. Well, it's like that self-fulfilling prophecy. Like if you think this is the worst, this is the worst, this is going to worse, like you're going to spiral downwards.
I always say your brain looks for that evidence. Whatever thoughts you are sending it, your brain seeks it to prove that it's true. So, I mean, even if it's health, like I've always been overweight, or I've always struggled with my relationship with my dad, or I'll never be a successful entrepreneur. All day long, your brain will seek that evidence to find ways to prove that's true. Like, see, you just had a muffin. No wonder you can't lose weight. I mean, it just all day long. And it won't find the positives that are there.
Right.
Even though they're there, your brain is just so stuck on trying to believe that truth, that lie, really, that you've been feeding it.
Yeah. And that's like so often when I teach on goals or habit change, it's think, write, talk, act as if whatever it is you're wanting to change is already true. Because there is so much brain science behind this, but when you rewire your thought process, things do start to become true. And I love that you brought up like multiple things can be true at once. Like you can choose to look at things from like a positive perspective to retrain your thoughts around it and also acknowledge that it's hard and feel that sadness and that overwhelm. But ultimately, like we get to decide what we do with that. And I was just kind of smiling to myself as you were talking about this, because I feel like that is what we just went through with our flood. Is like, the fact is our house is full of water. Arguably like one of the hardest things we have gone through up until this point. But what are we going to do with it? Because at the end of the day, it's just another day. And this can either be like the most depressing, overwhelming, stressful, angry, frustrated time of our lives, or you know, it's one foot in front of the other and this sucks, but here we go. And, you know, not that I would wish that period of time upon anyone, but like we were fine. And like, we have some really cool moments and memories from that season. And we learned some very incredible lessons as a family and came out better on the other side from it. And I think it was for me just so self-evident how years of committing to understanding my mindset and the way that we choose our thoughts and retraining just ourselves and the way we think about situations just paid off in the biggest way possible.
I think that's when I pause and think about people though. And I don't want to say I feel bad. I mean, I do feel bad, but they just haven't learned those tools and skills and the training, like, for example, that you and I have. And it wasn't a one day class that I went to. It's every day I'm listening, I'm reading, I'm studying, I'm getting it sprinkled in. And I know the impact it's had on my life in so many ways, relationships, finances, how I raise my kids and what they see and stuff versus people who don't have this knowledge or the tools to be like, okay, like I've got choices here in how I show up to this situation. And yep, it might be tough and it's going to be a journey, but hey, we're all still here. The house is still standing and we can do this.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You mentioned this topic of mental health first aid, and I know that that is something that you facilitate. Can you tell us more about what that means and how we can even bring that back to our day-to-day lives right now?
Yeah. So I was actually certified probably, I can't keep track, a couple years ago almost. And I always ask people, especially if I'm in front of a group or a crowd or something, how many of you have heard of first aid CPR? And most people, of course, they've heard of it. I would say 90, 95% of people have taken it. I mean, I've been first aid certified for probably three different times. You know, a lot of times work requires it, or one time in college, even I needed extra credits. So I took first aid CPR again, just for fun. But this is similar in the fact, but it's different because it's focused on mental health. So if you come up to a car accident, you know how to stop, have a conversation with them, help them, stop the bleed, call 911, whatever it might be. We can do those things. Although it doesn't make us a heart surgeon, we can't take it that far. We still have to get them to the professionals and get the help that they need. Same thing goes, but for mental health, it's really focusing on somebody's mind. What if they have a substance use problem? Maybe they've got anxiety, depression, they're struggling with an eating disorder, bipolar, whatever it might be. Taking this class, again, doesn't make you a doctor, but it helps you really recognize, okay, what are the signs and symptoms that maybe I should be looking for? And how can I help that person? Because there's still, sadly, it's been talked about a lot more, but there's so much stigma still. I mean, especially in the ag industry. And so what do we do? And I tell people when I teach this class, so it's a day-long training for you to get certified. And one of the stories I tell is about a friend who, shortly after COVID, I ran into her at a big community event. And I asked her, I said, hey, how are you? And what does everybody say, Emily?
Fine. How are you?
Yep. We always say that. Like, that's the expected answer almost, right? Mm-hmm. And she looked at me just point blank and she shook her head and she said, I'm not well. And I just stood there. Like, I just froze and I thought, how can she not be well? What does she mean by that? I mean, she's got a great family. They farm and ranch. She's very involved in the community, just has it all together, right? And at that moment, like an awkward 5 seconds passed and somebody came up and started talking to all of us or whatever. And that was kind of the end of the story. Fast forward a couple months and I got a text from my mom and she said, did you know, we'll just say Susan, did you know Susan attempted suicide?
Mm.
And I think it was one of those moments where I'm like, is everybody this clueless? Like, I had no idea what to say to her. And the fact that I didn't follow up is still, embarrassing to me to this day. She's still here. I've had many conversations with her. She's doing well and stuff. But it's that whole, I didn't know what to do. Like, I didn't know what to say because I felt awkward. And when I look at it now and with the training that I've had, I think, how did she feel? I mean, for her to actually admit and say something to me that she was not doing well, and I still didn't do anything. I mean, how do you think she was feeling? And so it's just, it's been eye-opening to me. We go through so many different things in the class. I always tell people a full day of mental health first aid training doesn't sound real thrilling. and especially if it's a company, sometimes companies have private trainings for their employees. You could tell people don't look real excited to be there in the morning. And I'm like, I know it's a full day mental health training. Doesn't sound exciting, but I will tell you, I've had like road department guys come up to me at noon halfway through and they're like, this is so much better than I thought it was going to be. Mm-hmm. And so it's fun. There's a lot of activities. People learn a ton. And I will tell you, the stories and feedback I've had from afterwards of just conversations that they've had or lives that have been changed. I always say, I think the world would be in a different place if everybody had this training. And I don't say that lightly. I think it should just be a basic class that everybody has because it makes such a difference, either for the people themselves or the people that they run into that need the help.
Yeah. So how did you get, is that something that anyone can get certified in? What did that process look like?
Yeah, you can look like and see if any are hosted nearby. I mean, for me to be a facilitator, I had to go through, you know, an intense 3-day training and all of that stuff. But like any community can bring this to the, I've done public ones in different towns, you know, where anybody can come. We've got healthcare workers, veterinarians, bankers, whoever can come to it, take the class, and they've got their certificate then, just like you would a first aid CPR training. Mm-hmm. You can do the same thing in this 1-day mental health first aid training.
Mm. Is there any takeaways from that experience that you can share for someone who is interested and would maybe like to bring this to their community? But is there anything we can walk away with today to maybe be able to recognize some of those signs of the people in our life?
Mm-hmm. I think the funny thing is, we know a lot of the signs and symptoms, right? We actually take time throughout the class to go through, for example, early signs and symptoms. So if somebody is struggling with something, what are those early signs and symptoms to look for? Maybe it's your friend isn't showing up to Bible study, or they're usually super on time and prompt, and now they're kind of late. Or if they're usually put together and they're not looking real put together, it's like, huh. It might not be anything, right? Trust me, I've got my days too. But if those things go on for maybe an extended period of time, maybe we just say something to that person. So for example, if you ask somebody how they're doing and they say, oh, I'm good, I'm fine, doing well. And if you just wait a second or two, and if you kind of look at them and say, how are you really? And silence can be such a good thing. We are so not used to it. We don't like it, but you give people a spare second. I've seen it happen a million times. You give them a second or two and just look at them and they might just let it all out. Mm-hmm. I mean, they need to talk to somebody and just they got water in their house. How are you really? That had to be hard. Mm-hmm. Like that had to be challenging. And I know that's a lot on you right now. Mm-hmm. Or I know you lost your sister about a month ago. I mean, how are you? And in fact, that happened one time to me. Thank God. This is like a positive example of after my class, I ran into the grocery store. I don't know about you guys, but if I run into the grocery store, you see everybody and their dog. Mm-hmm. And I almost want to like put a hat and sunglasses on because I'm trying to be fast. And I see one of my neighbors is in there and I'm shooting by her and I'm like, hey, Karen, how's it going? And thank God I pay attention. You know, one of my favorite quotes from John Maxwell is walk slowly through the crowd. Mm. Because I like to run through the crowd. Mm-hmm. But when you slow down, you notice things, you notice people, you notice opportunities. And that day at the grocery store, one of my neighbors who's usually very loud and outgoing and spunky, she just kind of put her head down when I asked her. And I stopped that cart so fast and I looked at her and she said, oh, we're doing okay. And I looked at her and I'm like, that is not like her. And it took me 2 seconds to remember she'd lost her sister just a few days earlier. Mm. Her sister had passed away. And you can bet I pulled my cart over and we stood there and talked for 20 minutes about the funeral arrangements, the family, the stories, all of those things. And you feel better as a human when you understand mental health and like the things that you can do, even if they seem small. It's like, mm-hmm. I can notice these things and I can suggest. I mean, if it gets to worsening signs and symptoms, if we're in a crisis, what can I do? Can I suggest, you know, reaching out? Because there is help. And I think that's been part of the big stigma, is that people can't get better. You can never get over this trauma or whatever it might be. And it's like, there's so many people that are out there willing to help you nowadays that recovery can be a possibility.
Yeah. Which I think lends to such a bigger conversation, specifically in the areas that we live in and, you know, the type of people who we work with, is like that barrier to access to resources. And so, like, what direction do you guide people in if they are open to the idea of therapy or a coach or something like that? Mm-hmm. Where do they begin?
I think that's a big thing. There's that, oh man, is it a couple years ago, that 988 hotline came out? It made national headlines. So I always tell people, picture it on your hand. Like if you were to call for a car accident, it'd be 911. But for mental health, you can dial or text 988. And I believe, don't quote me, because I know this is how it is in North Dakota, if I call or text to 988, it will send me to people in North Dakota to have a conversation with and talk with. So if that's where people have to start, or even with a Google to see what's available in your area, or there's so much of it's online now too. But I think you hit the nail on the head where it's letting people know that there are resources, that there are opportunities for them to connect with people. Some don't have to take it that far either. Mm-hmm. Not to make that sound like it's a bad thing at all. But to be honest, in our area, a lot of times people are isolated. They maybe don't see their neighbors for a while. They get to town once a week, once a month, depends on where they live. And they're maybe not as involved. It can be a generational thing too, what their thoughts are on, geez, what's this going to look like if everybody knows what I drive and they see me parked at the therapist office, right? Mm-hmm. Or I've got work to do. How am I going to get away? Who's going to feed the cows? Or if you're a female, who's going to take the kids? Like, how embarrassing that I have to do this and that, and I'm just struggling. But I don't know, it's this badge of honor that we have that it's like, well, maybe I'll be better tomorrow or in a month. And it's, a lot of people don't get better on their own. And so what am I making it mean to not have conversation? And for some, like I was going to say, it's stop and have coffee with your neighbor. See how they're doing. Just visit. Community is a huge thing. And we see the research as of lately, of course, even more so because of COVID, and what happens to people who don't have those connections. Maybe they don't have family around. Maybe they don't have friends. You can find it though. Right? That, I mean, a lot of that's the mindset of how can I plug myself in? What can I do? Even if it's online, things that both you and I offer, or if it's something in town, getting yourself accountable to show up to some things and have those conversations.
Yeah, we were never, ever meant to do life alone. And, you know, in the types of places that we live, it can be really easy to be isolated. And then you take that, especially when you're struggling and not knowing how to approach those conversations. And then you add on a busy season with farming and then kids in the mix. It's really easy to be alone. And I think one of the best things I've ever done for myself is put myself out there and find people who I can sit in a space with and realize, like, I am so not alone. Like, so many pieces of the things I've struggled with, or of the human experience in general, I have come to realize are more universal than we like to give credit for, right? Exactly. And not to say that we don't have our own versions of the same things, but it can be so cathartic just to be in a conversation and recognize, like, this is the hand that I'm dealt. These are the things that I'm dealing with. These are the insecurities or struggles or whatever. And to share that with someone and have them share back, like, what their trials look like, and recognize, like, oh, like, I'm not crazy. I'm not the only one who's going through this. You know, I never realized that something I would feel so passionately about is this concept around therapy. Like, it, for me, for the longest time was like, oh, someone else needs that. Like, I haven't been through enough trauma for me to need it. Like, that's for crazy people. Like, whatever. There's so many stories that we have around mental health resources, especially in the ag space. And especially because so many people that I know live and work on these very deep-rooted intergenerational operations. So we're directly confronted with these different opinions and views, and many of which are outdated or whatever. But it has been something, once I gave myself permission to seek it out and do it, has been so life-giving. And I have talked about length on this podcast episode. If you are finding this for the first time, just scroll back a little bit. You'll hear me talk about it plenty. But, you know, for someone, you brought up the example of, like, the mom who recognizes that she wants to do this, but like, what am I going to do with the kids? What are people going to think? Or I even think about, you know, the guys I know who are working alongside their dads or their brothers or their uncles or their grandpas. And like, how do we begin to have those conversations around mental health, specifically in these family and multi-generational dynamics? Is it just a matter of like, oh, I have an appointment in town, don't ask me any questions? Or how do we start initiating these conversations within our own circles?
You know what's funny? I think sometimes we make things a bigger deal than we have to, which just adds to the stigma. Right. So, I mean, I could say super simply right now, like, you just start. Just pull somebody aside and have that conversation and see where it goes. That doesn't mean that out in the barn with my husband and my dad and my brother, I'm going to be like, hey, what's wrong with you today? You look like you could use some help, right? Okay, right. That's not the way that we're going to solve it. But pulling somebody aside and maybe just having that conversation. I remember, so long story short, my brother and his wife have had some infertility struggles, and they have a surrogate, and their first baby will be coming here in July and stuff. And they kind of had a scary situation here a couple months ago, and it did not look good when somebody's pregnant and carrying your child, and it was super scary. And the next day, I was driving to town, and I happened to meet my brother on the road. And I thought about it, and I was like, oh my gosh, I haven't talked to him since yesterday's episode or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know about everybody else, but like, I see my brother almost every day here on the ranch, but it's like, we don't always get to talk even too, or sometimes we just get passing out on the roads. And so I called him, and I don't always do that, but I picked up the phone. And I called him and I just said, hey, how are you? I'm guessing yesterday really sucked. And things were fine. We knew that at that point, but I still called him to see. And I thank God that I called him, because he said yesterday was probably one of the worst days of my life. And it's like, we get so busy, wrapped up in our own things. And I get it. Everybody's busy. Everybody's got something to be doing. But then I think sometimes, like, what's the point of life if we can't slow down to have conversations with our loved ones or somebody that we see is maybe struggling or having a hard time? And so, I mean, even in the suicide training portion of the mental health first aid, I mean, we really talk about bringing up the topic as hard as it can be for those people who are struggling. For them, it's like a weight off their shoulders often for somebody to bring it up to them, because it's like somebody realizes how much I'm struggling, how much I'm having a hard time. But like I said, when you're talking with family, sometimes it can be as basic as like, hey, how are things going? Just see. And it can be that much more difficult. Trust me, I know, when it's your dad or it's a different generation or whatever. But sometimes if you just sit down and look like you're not in a hurry and that you're willing to have a talk, they might open up. Here's the other thing though, and I said this earlier, they may not talk. There's going to be people who say, I don't need help, I'm totally fine, I'm whatever. That is not your opportunity to get short with them, especially if it's a family member, because sometimes we do that and be like, clearly you need some help, you're struggling, right?
Right.
That's going to push them away even more, versus if I say, hey, that, you know, that's okay, but if you ever do want to talk, or if things ever feel like they're kind of hard for you, just know I'd be happy to help or sit down and visit with you. Your tone, your facial expressions, your gestures will say a lot when you have that conversation.
Well, and something you said earlier in the episode, like, we can't force anyone to change. And sometimes I do think we have to bravely lead by example and say, you know, maybe it's starting with, I have an appointment in town today, or maybe it's, you know, like, I heard on this podcast that this could be helpful, so I'm going to out, or I had a friend or whatever. And just, I think a question I generally get is like, how do you feel so confident in what you're doing that other people's opinions don't matter to you? And, you know, to the point of flexing mindset, is it a muscle? And so if you recognize that it's time to seek help or work with a coach or go to therapy or something like that, like, there's some element that has to be like, I know that this is best for me and not everyone's going to understand, and that has to be okay. And maybe that's where you start in therapy. It's just like, being okay and learning how to articulate with the people around you is why seeking it in the first place.
Yeah. I mean, think about it. It really goes back to the coaching model that I use. Is like, what are your thoughts about going to see a counselor or a therapist? Right. If mm-hmm. I think, oh my gosh, that's bad. You have to really be struggling. That's embarrassing. That's whatever. You're not going to go. Like, you're not going to make the choice to do that. Versus if I change my perspective and my thought and think, you know, they're professionals. They are there to help. My friend went and she had outstanding results. Maybe I want to try it. I mean, you get to choose which of those thoughts you want to have. And I always tell people too, sometimes it can be figuring out what brings you joy in your life, what fills your cup. We actually spend quite a bit of time in the class going over like what's well-being for you. And for some, mm-hmm. it's being in the garden. It's going for a walk and getting fresh air. It's grabbing coffee with a friend. And this is where we don't need to compare what Karen does and what Susan does. It's like, you got to figure you out. I mean, I probably talked about this yesterday at a training, which is why it's fresh in my mind. But if you don't know what's valuable or what's important to you, you're not going to know what fills your cup anymore because you're so busy trying to do it for everybody else. And all of a sudden, that's where we can start spiraling down when, wow, when is the last time I took time to go meet a friend or have an hour to myself outside? And I will never forget one time a friend said that. Like, we were talking about what having a great day, being successful looked like. And this was a few years back. And I was like, well, I checked this off and I spoke at this event and then I had a meeting here and I like did all these great things in my mind that day. And she's like, mm-hmm. oh, wow. She's like, I had an incredible day too. I went and grabbed coffee with a friend. I had a massage. I went and read a book at home. And I was like, wow. Mm-hmm. I mean, talk about just how we get the opportunity to define what makes it mm-hmm. a great day, what makes it successful.
Mm, that is such a journey I have been on recently. It's like breaking free from that expectation of what productivity and success needs to look like. And like, how do we build well-rounded lives that we love that aren't rooted in what this person thinks or needing to prove ourselves in any way? It's like how lately I've really been on this journey of like defining what success means. And like, yes, I have some goals I know that I'm going to bring to fruition. I want to do meaningful work that I love. I want to do impactful things with my community. Like, there's so many cool projects, you know, but my worth and my definition of success is so different than it's ever been. Like, I want to have mornings. I want to embrace the time with my family. I want to go on long walks. I don't want to drown in this like constant rat race of not being able to keep up with my to-do list. Like, all what's that for nothing? You know, I think this conversation comes up in agriculture and a lot of the conversations I've had too of like, you know, we work so hard on our farming operations so that we can pass it on to the next generation. And if we're not careful, we work so hard that we don't even have a relationship with the next generation and they don't want to be a part of it. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I've really kind of brought that mindset back to myself is like, all of these external accomplishments don't mean anything if they don't feel good along the way. And what does it look like to do a little bit of everything that I love without like unrealistic expectations attached to it?
No, I think that is so good because I still remember when I moved back here right after college. I mean, I was going to travel the world and do all these big things, but because CJ came back here, I was like, well, suppose I better come hang out with you. I still remember my mom asking me and she said, are you sure you want to come back here? Because it can be challenging. It can be hard and stuff. But like you said, we take pride in that in agriculture of this being often a generational legacy to continue on. And there's multiple generations that can be working together. But how many families can actually say, this looks fun? Like, mm-hmm. I want to come back here. Or is it just that it's embedded in our heads that this is what I have to do versus I can guarantee you ask my kids right now, they'd love to come back because it's enjoyable. We have fun. We work together. It doesn't have to be a 24/7. I can never get away, never take a vacation because we've changed that mindset. We've changed that yes. thought that's been in the mind for forever.
And it is such a mindset that like no days off and all of that, like the, you know, the tenacity and the hardworkingness of this industry is beautiful in so many ways. But I think this is why we are seeing such a mental health crisis, especially in ag, is because we haven't given ourselves permission to enjoy life or take a day off or do anything outside of our identity in the career. And that's a dangerous rabbit hole for any industry. I lost myself that in teaching. And you know, but it's just been so normalized and celebrated. And so, you know, I have a lot of these challenging conversations, and it's beautiful the way I'm starting to see the story rewritten. It's like, no, we can really do what we love, and we can be good, you know, ministers of the land and of our animals and, you know, pass things on, but we can also enjoy it. And we can also take a vacation, and we can also go on date night, and we can also pause to go to a baseball game. And like, what a beautiful thing.
I think you and I mean, truly, I'm trying to be calm right now because I'm like, she gets it. We are some of the few that, and I don't mean this rudely, but it's just like, we've had the practice. We see what skills and tools, and we've had the different perspectives put into our minds of what life can look like. And when you have that, life truly does completely change. It doesn't change overnight. It takes some time. It takes some effort to figure it out. But the world has put this ideal out there of what your family should look like, what your house, what you drive, your operation, your business, all of these things. And everybody is just trying to keep up with that right now versus pausing to slow down and think, what do I want it to look like? What are the things that I value? And a big thing that I wanted to touch on real quick, because you kind of mentioned this, is there are hard things in agriculture or running business or whatever it might be. There's a lot of things that can be thrown at you. And I was at a conference one time, and I heard like one of our statewide psychologists speaking. And I'm so fascinated by that stuff, because I've learned what I've learned, but I'm not a therapist. I'm not a counselor. I always tell people that. I have a lot of certificates. I have a lot of training. I mean, I probably could be a PhD by now because of the vast amount of information I study. But I went up to her after the conference and I asked her, I said, so why do some people struggle so much? I feel like I'm in this world of, I do a ton of leadership training and speaking and mentoring and masterminds. And then I do a lot of mental health trainings and those conversations. And it's like, I asked her, how do we bridge this gap? How do I help people go from one to the other, or not even be at the one? How can we just have people that lead? And she said, you know what the number one thing is that people struggle with is they don't know how to cope. Like they don't know how to show up when things get hard. They don't know what to do. And so they maybe pick some poor choices. They do things, they buffer is what I call it with my clients. They choose things that probably don't serve them, whether it's scrolling on their phones or binging Netflix or eating sweets or, I mean, whatever isn't serving them. But then some people, they grab a glass of wine or they have a drink, and then it becomes consistent, and then it becomes more than one, or they try something one time and it can spiral down to a negative path.
You bring up such a good point of just like having the tenacity and like being self-aware, I think has been such a game changer for me, is being able to recognize those thought patterns and what power I have to change them. And just also holding space for the duality of the human experience. Like, it's so easy to be held captive by circumstance and like the hard things, and being able to recognize like, this is hard and I'm going to choose how I'm going to feel about it. And that is going to be imperfect, right? I think dangerous traps we can get in is a shame spiral, is like, you know, I want to do better. I want to be better, yada, 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 whatever category of life we're talking about. And then one thing goes awry. And so then we're like, well, I already ate an Oreo, so I'm going to eat the whole sleeve of Oreos. And then like, this entire health journey I said I wanted to go on is for trash, and throwing it out the window. And it's, you know, learning to stand back up and try again. And every minute of every day is the opportunity to change your life.
I think sometimes we look at people and it's like, man, they're just lucky. They always get it right. And I think people can see that, but like, you don't, because you don't look at the mistakes I've made too. All you're seeing, your brain is like, they do it always right and perfect. And then it sends us down that shame thing, like you said, where it's like, I always mess it up. This must not be for me or whatever. And it's like, we just can't look at things that way. If you try it long enough, something's going to work and you're going to learn along the way. It's like, you can see it as failure or see it as, okay, what did I learn in that challenge? Because everybody's going to have them. I always say life is 50-50. It's going to be 50% fun and great and enjoyable. And then there's going to be a lot of hard times and challenges. And if I don't know how to show up to them, life's going to be that much harder throughout everything.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, you choose the hard or the hard chooses you, right? Like, nothing is ever actually meant to be easy. Even when we're doing all the right things in all the right ways, like whatever that looks like, there's still, you know, there's new things to navigate. And so I'm really embracing a season of what it means to choose my heart and love my heart, because it's inevitable. And so you know, we can find so much joy in it when we flex that muscle of retraining our mindset and also many things. So you guys may not have recognized this by this point, but we are on recording number 8 of this interview. We have been, you know, just living it up with maybe rural internet or something. But I think this is a shining example of what it looks like to bring two people together for an interview who have a, it's all right, we're going to figure it out mindset.
That, right, isn't that the huge ironic thing of this? I mean, literally, like, wait, what did I end with? Where should I start talking again? And it's like, hey, we're still smiling and laughing. And it's like, I mean, it's truly a prime example of like, I could be, this sucks. Let's pick another day. What is the problem? Mm-hmm. It's going to be a bad pot. I mean, but I'm just like, it is, it's fine. It's going good. They're going to piece her together and I'm sure it's sounding great.
It's going to be great. I have full faith in our editing team, but we just have to smile and laugh along the way, which I think is just such a testament to where both of us are at with our mindsets. But I just got the text that says baby's awake and she's hungry. So Callie, where can we connect with you? What do you have coming up and how can we be a part of these beautiful gifts that you bring to the world?
Awesome. No, I feel like I've always got a mix of different things going on. And so best place would be to kind of keep track. Of course, you can follow me on Instagram. It's just Callie Thorne or CallieThorne.com. I always tell people how it's spelled because nobody knows, right? C-A-L-L-I and then Thorne, T-H-O-R-N-E. But yeah, I'm running a mastermind right now on gaps and gains, which is perfect for what we've been discussing today. I'll probably launch another one sometime this year. I've got an online course, Finding You, Discovering It, and I'll be opening that again shortly. So kind of just got to pay attention to my pages. If you go to my website, get on my email list, and then you'll for sure be in the know.
Beautiful, beautiful. All right, before we close out, Callie, question I ask every guest on this show, what does personal growth mean to you in this season?
It's funny because I think it's similar to you at the moment. And it's that, honestly, part of it's applauding myself, which sounds silly. I say it sounds silly because we don't ever do that for ourselves, right? Mm-hmm. But applauding myself for what my life looks like right now. Being able to say no to things when I see other parents easily saying yes, but I've sat back and thought, is that really what we want right now? Do we want to add that to the list? What are my values and priorities? And I have to keep that my focus, or it's pretty easy to do what everybody else is doing in this world today. So constantly plugging away and learning and doing what I can for myself, my family, and then others that I get to impact.
Yeah. Well, that's what we were talking about before we even hit record the first time is like, you have to say no to things to say yes to what you really want. And our plates are so, so overwhelmingly full at the retreat we talked about. It's like, you know, the Thanksgiving plate. And no wonder we're so overwhelmed and overstimulated and exhausted. So, you know, if there's one thing you can take away from this conversation is what belongs on your plate and how do you say yes to it and be okay with taking some things off.
That's what I always say, right? Nobody dished up your plate for you. You get to dish it up. Everything that's on there, you said yes to, or you allowed somebody else to say yes for you.
Yeah. Or someone put on your plate and you get to decide how much of it you eat.
We're talking food and now I'm getting hungry, but yeah.
Same. All right, Callie, thank you so much. I'm so grateful for you.
Thanks for having me. It was great to visit with you.
Have I told you today how much I appreciate you? I'd like to imagine this was a meaningful backyard patio kind of chat between friends sipping LaCroix at sunset. If you enjoyed today's show, please take a screenshot to share or forward this episode to a friend. You can also find me at Emily Rushel over on social to continue the conversation. It's truly a joy to hear what tidbits and takeaways made an impact on your day. As always, all links and resources mentioned in today's episode can be found in the show notes listed below or over at emilyrushel.com. Special thanks to my podcast manager, Jill Carr, for the time and love she puts into producing Gather and Growth for this community. What a blessing it is to be on this personal growth journey together. Forever grateful for you.